While we take a break from our regularly scheduled sermon series for this news bulletin, this week is Valentine's Day. Did you know that? Some of you guys are like, oh, shoot, is that this week? Well, I've always thought that Valentine's Day is a little bit of a strange celebration. Like, how many of you remember back in school on Valentine's Day, you would take a box to school for Valentine's, you know? The girls would all decorate it, and the guys would take a shoebox with a hole in the top, you know, that's just how we did it. But it was kind of weird, right? Because you give everybody a valentine, so the boys give boys a valentine, girls to girls, boys to girls. Even the teacher got a valentine, I guess. But if you remember, did you have those experiences where maybe there was a girl in your class that you thought was kind of cute, or a boy, and you're like, it's so weird to give a valentine to this boy that I think is cute, so I just won't sign my name. Anybody else do that? Because I did that. I'm a chicken. So that's just how it is. So it's kind of a weird thing. But it is the time when husbands and wives think about, okay, what do we have to do? You know, there's always kind of like a moment of panic. What do we do for Valentine's Day? What am I going to get my wife? What am I going to get my husband? And we still do it all these days, years later. So what I'm going to do this morning is talk a little bit about a love story in the Bible. And so what Valentine's Day does for me is it gives me a chance to talk about marriage and love. And the reason I do this is very, very important. I do this because marriages in America and marriages in the church are in trouble. And what has happened is that what God has designed to be one man, one woman for one lifetime, and what he designed to be thoughtful and satisfying, and what he intended for our good, has been changed into something else. And so sin, what it's done for, it's broken all, every part of human existence is broken by sin. But specifically in love and marriage, what sin has done for us is that it's changed our attitudes and our opinions and behaviors. And we as a church, we've slid down the hill with our culture into seeing marriage as something else, something other than the way that God designed it to be. And so we really shouldn't be we shouldn't be surprised when it doesn't bring us the kind of satisfaction that God designed it to have for us. Which, you know, we here at this church, we want to celebrate marriage. We want to celebrate love. We want to celebrate what God has designed to be very, very good. And so we take chances like this week, Valentine's Day, to talk about things like this, which is also why we're doing the date night next Sunday night. If you haven't signed up, I encourage you. $5 free babysitting. There's no downside. So you get a check mark, brownie point, husbands, for taking your wives. So please come. We're going to have a lot of fun. But all we're trying to do is to find ways to encourage the right kind of habits, the right kind of love and relationship between husband and wife. That's all we're trying to do. And so today we're going to look at a great love story found in the book of Genesis. So grab your Bibles and go with me to Genesis 29. And we're going to look at a great love story. Genesis 29. I'm going to read a good portion of this chapter in kind of different chunks as I explain what's going on a little bit. So Genesis 29 verse 1 says, "Then Jacob went on his journey and came to the land of the people of the east. As he looked, he saw a well in the field, and behold, three flocks of sheep standing or lying beside it. For out of that well the flocks were watered. The stone on the well's mouth was large, and when all the flocks were gathered there, the shepherds would roll the stone from the mouth of the well and water the sheep, and put the stone back in its place over the mouth of the well. Jacob said to them, 'My brothers, where do you come from?' They said, 'We are from Haran.' He said to them, 'Do you know Laban, the son of Nahor?' They said, 'We know him.' He said to them, 'Is it well with them?' They said, 'It is well, and see, Rachel, his daughter, is coming with the sheep.' He said, 'Behold, it is still high day. It is not time for the livestock to be gathered together. Water the sheep and go, pasture them.' But they said, 'We cannot until all the flocks have gathered together and the stone is rolled from the mouth of the well. Then we water the sheep.'" So let me give you a little bit of background on what's going on at this point of the story. Jacob is on the run. He's run away from home in that sense. Now he's an older man, but he's run away from home in part because his brother Esau wanted to kill him. So he runs away from Esau, but he also runs away in search of a wife. And he goes back to his uncle's house in search of a wife. So in verse 1, he comes near, he's in the area, he finds this well, and he's told by the shepherds there that they don't actually water the sheep until everybody is there, presumably because this was a large stone over the mouth of the well that they put there maybe for protection, maybe they put it there so people didn't fall in, but it was a large stone, it took several guys to move the stone, and so we wait until everybody gets here before we move the stone, they told Jacob. Let's keep going, verse 9. While he was still speaking with them, Rachel came with her father's sheep, for she was a shepherdess. Now, as soon as Jacob saw Rachel, the daughter of Laban, his mother's brother, and the sheep of Laban, his mother's brother, Jacob came near and rolled the stone from the well's mouth and watered the flock of Laban, his mother's brother. So here's what happened. As he's standing there talking to the other shepherds, here comes Rachel. And he took one look at Rachel. And he does what every junior high boy has ever done. He starts showing off. If you notice in the story, he himself rolls away the large stone, right? Waters all of her sheep. Was she impressed? Let's keep going. Verse 15. Verse 15. Then Laban said to Jacob, "Because you are my kinsman, should you therefore serve me for nothing? Tell me, what shall your wages be?" Now Laban had two daughters. The name of the older was Leah, and the name of the younger was Rachel. Leah's eyes were weak, but Rachel was beautiful in form and appearance. Jacob loved Rachel, and he said, "I will serve you 7 years for your younger daughter, Rachel." Laban said, "It's better that I give her to you than I should give her to any other man. Stay with me." So Jacob served 7 years for Rachel, and they seemed to him but a few days because of the love he had for her. So two daughters. One was, I'll just say, homely. All right, it says that her eyes were weak. That didn't mean that she, you know, needs glasses. That means that she wasn't easy on the eyes. Maybe I could say it that way, all right? So you have Leah and you have Rachel. Leah, not so pretty. Rachel, smoking hot, all right? So Jacob takes one look at smoking hot Rachel and falls in love with her. Maybe you could say it was love at first sight. And that verse, that last verse that I just read, is so interesting. He said that his love was so intense for Rachel that working for Laban 7 years. Now remember, this is 7 years while not married to Rachel. This isn't like, you know, I get the goods and then I got to work for 7 years. This is 7 years in a sense, kind of like the dowry. And after 7 years, he gets Rachel. But he says that his love for her was so intense that the 7 years seemed like just a day. Now, doesn't that just warm your heart? You know, there are Hallmark cards that use almost the same phrase. So I typed it into Google. The very first card that came up was this. Here's what it says. Maybe you can't read it. "Sometimes I look at you and it seems like only yesterday we were falling in love, getting married, becoming a family. And somewhere between then and now, we've managed to do a whole lot of living and loving." Isn't that just great? Hallmark plagiarized the Bible. They stole it from Jacob. He was the one that came up with the idea. Hallmark plagiarized it. You heard it first here. Now, it kind of sounds corny, but it's true. Let me tell you why it's true. One of the most ironic things about marriage and love is that the best years of marriage are not the first years, but the later years. And we all think that it's going to be on the front end, but then over the years, and with more years together, you just feel like it just gets better and sweeter with time. Now, all the love stories in the movies, books, and all of that, all the great love is at the front end. The best years are the later years. And I tell couples that all the time when I'm doing like marriage counseling, that great marriages are those that get better with time. And there are far too many that are impatient and they don't want to wait for the good years. And so what happens, you have these young couples, they look at the love that mom has for dad, They look at the love that grandma has for grandpa, and they say, I want that now. Well, what they don't realize is that it took a lot of years for grandma and grandpa to have that kind of love. It took a lot of years for mom and dad to have that kind of love. They went through a lot of things, the good and the bad and the hard and the difficult and the great and the celebrations and all of those things to get the kind of love that they have right now. But after 1 year or 2 years, they think they're going to have that same kind of love, and it just doesn't work that way. You have to be patient to get to the good stuff. So good love becomes great love with time. You got to pay your dues. You got to put the time in. And so listen, if I could just say it this way, and maybe you're not going to believe me, but if you've been married like 5 years, let's say, you may think you love your wife or your husband, but in another 25 years, you're going to look back and you're going to realize that the greatest parts of your love have yet to blossom for your spouse. It just gets better and sweeter and deeper and more wonderful with time. And you got to be patient. The best years are yet to come. So let's go back to our story, verse 21. Then Jacob says to Laban, he says, give me my wife that I may go in to her, for my time is complete. In other words, 7 years are done. So Laban gathered together all the people of the place and made a feast. But in the evening, he took his daughter Leah and brought her to Jacob, and he went into her. Laban gave his female servant Zilpah to his daughter Leah to be her servant. And in the morning, behold, it was Leah. And Jacob said to Laban, what is this you've done to me? Did I not serve you with Rachel? Why then have you deceived me? Laban said, It is not so done in our country to give the younger before the firstborn. Complete the week of this one, and we will give you the other also in return for another 7 years. Jacob did so and completed her week. Then Laban gave him his daughter Rachel to be his wife. So Jacob, verse 30, so Jacob went into Leah also, and he loved Rachel more than Leah and served Laban for another 7 years. Now, there are all kinds of questions I want to ask when I get to heaven. One of the questions is right here. How did Jacob not realize that it was Leah, not Rachel? Ever wonder that? I mean, like, how dark was the tent? How drunk was the man, you know, after all the celebration? You know, wake up in the morning and go, and who are you again? Very strange. Sometime I'm going to ask that question when I get to heaven. So basically the story is that after 1 week of a honeymoon with Leah, at the end of that honeymoon, he gets Rachel. But very importantly, it says that he loved Rachel more than he loved Leah. And so he served another 7 years, but this time he gets Rachel on the front end of the 7 years, not on the back end. So he loved Rachel. And Jacob and Rachel have this kind of iconic, this love story that people talk about in the Bible. And probably, you know, you look at this and you think, well, that's kind of a good love story. It's better than what we get on the Hallmark Channel, which is dorky and corny. Just saying. Now, probably what happens when you look at this story like I do, you see that it's a love story with Jacob and Rachel. You know, he works 14 years for Rachel, and the first seven, it seemed like it was just like a day, and that's a lot of love. He loved her all of her days. And probably many of us feel a little bit bad for Leah, right? Because it feels like this poor woman is not loved as much as her smoking hot sister. And that seems very, very unfair. Can you imagine growing up in that house, though? Can you imagine being a child and watching that, or just the dynamics of that tent? Just imagine what it would have been like with Leah knowing that Jacob, her husband, loved her sister more than he loved her. But he did. He loved Rachel, and it was a good and a great love story. Or did he really? Was this really a great love story about Jacob and Rachel? Well, it seems that way at the beginning. What happens in the rest of this chapter and on to the next chapter, we see that Rachel and Leah have this antagonistic relationship, in part because Leah keeps popping out babies, four more by the end of the chapter. But that's not the end of the story here. And I want to show you the rest of the story that probably you don't know. And I want you to be challenged in your own heart about where this great love story really goes, and whether or not this is really a great love story between Jacob and Rachel. I'm going to show you three more passages in the story. First, chapter 35. Chapter 35. Verse 16. Chapter 35, verse 16 says, "Then they," so Jacob and his whole family, they leave Laban, they leave Haran, and they travel back to where Jacob is from, near Bethel. It says, then they journeyed from Bethel when they were still some distance from Ephrath. Maybe that sounds familiar. You remember in the Christmas story, Ephrata, Bethlehem, Ephrata. This is near Bethlehem. Rachel went into labor, and she had a hard labor. And when her labor was at its hardest, the midwife said to her, "Do not fear, you have another son." And as her soul was departing, for she was dying, she called his name Ben-Oni, but his father called him Benjamin. So Rachel died, and she was buried on the way to Ephrath, which is Bethlehem. And Jacob set up a pillar over her tomb. It is the pillar of Rachel's tomb, which is there to this day. Israel, that's Jacob, journeyed on and pitched his tent toward the Tower of Eder. So here's the story. What we read here is that as they're traveling along, Rachel, who is still at this point is a young woman, she dies in childbirth. And so, not to be strange, but once she dies, the love story between Jacob and Rachel ends. Okay? Let's keep going with the story. Chapter 48. This is all the way at the end of the book of Genesis. This is the end of Jacob's life. He, at this point, is now 147 years old, the Bible tells us. So he's a very old man. And he calls together his family in what we kind of would think of like a hospice situation. He knows he's about to die. He's about to give them kind of his final words. And among those final words, we read in verse 7. He says, "As for me, when I came from Paddan, to my sorrow, Rachel died in the land of Cana on the way, when there was still some distance to go to Ephrath. And I buried her there on the way to Ephrath, which is Bethlehem." So at age 147, he's on his deathbed. He's talking to his family, his boys, their children. Everybody's gathered together there. And he's giving them his like last sentences, his last thoughts. And among his last thoughts, he still reminisced and still talked about the great love he had for Rachel all those years later. One more passage to show you. Chapter 49, verse 28. Chapter 49, verse 28, here's what it says. "All these are the 12 tribes of Israel. This is what their father said to them as he blessed them, blessing each of them with the blessing suitable to him. Then he commanded them and said to them, 'I am to be gathered to my people. Bury me with my fathers in the cave that is in the field of Ephron the Hittite, in the cave that is in the field of Machpelah to the east of Mamre in the land of Canaan, which Abraham bought with a field from Ephron the Hittite to possess as a burying place.'" But now here's what I want you to see, verse 31. "There they buried Abraham and Sarah, his wife. There they buried Isaac and Rebekah, his wife, and there I buried Leah. The field and the cave that is in it were bought from the Hittites. When Jacob finished this, he died." So here's what's shocking about this story. Age 147, he's all the way at the end of his life. His wife, Rachel, dies as a young woman in childbirth. His wife, Leah, dies much, much later. At the end of Jacob's life, he requests to be married next to Leah, not Rachel. What do you make of that? I have a theory. And my theory is that over time, I think Jacob came to love Leah deeply. I think when you look at these stories, you find that Leah was more congenial than Rachel. She was more devoted to her husband than her sister was. Rachel, when you read the parts about Rachel, you find her to care about herself. She was bitter. She was conniving. She was this, like a child that never grew up. But Leah, though she was less loved at the beginning, she was devoted to her husband and took care of him all the way through the seasons of life. And, you know, at the front end, obviously she couldn't compete with her sister, so all she did was she took care of Jacob all of his life. She was more mature. She was more loving. She had her heart right with God. I don't have time to develop that, but even the names for her kids. So Rachel dies young. Leah lives a long life. Jacob loved Rachel greatly at the beginning, but he loved Leah deeply at the end. You see, the great love story that we have here is not Jacob and Rachel. This is a love story about Jacob and Leah, who over the course and the seasons and the ups and downs of a very long life together came to love each other deeply. And that's a great love story. Because so much of our culture and so many of our movies, they put all the love on the front end, at the beginning of life, in the first months together. But what we see in this love story is that the greatest and the deepest and the most satisfying parts of love are not in the front end and not in the first years, but after spending an entire life together and sharing all of the good and all of the bad and all of the memories and all of the struggles through the entire life. There's something that happens in time that takes love, which is shallow at the beginning, and deepens it, and you got to have time to get there. And so I think we find a couple of really cool principles in this that I want to talk about. First thing, I think that there's nothing more attractive to a man who loves the Lord than a woman who loves the Lord too. There's nothing more attractive to a man who loves the Lord than a woman who loves the Lord too. What we find in the story, and maybe I'm reading between the lines a little bit, but physical beauty was all at the front end with Rachel, right? But what we all know is that physical beauty fades away. It changes over time. But what improves over time is the heart. So physical beauty diminishes, but the heart shines more brightly with time. And so what happens is you see these old guys walking around, and when they look at their wife of 59 years, there is a sparkle in their eye. How do you explain that sparkle? Does she look like she did 59 years ago? No. But to him, she's never looked more beautiful than she does in that moment. Because the beauty part fades away. Heart part shines more brightly with time. To such a degree that when that guy looks at his wife, you know, he doesn't see the wrinkles and the bunions and the hip and the bent back and all of those things. All he sees is the beauty of a life shared together. The beauty of memories and the beauty of growing old together. There is a love that he has at 59 years that he couldn't even dream of after 5 years and 10 years and 15 years. That's the beauty of this love story. It takes time to get to the best parts. Don't be impatient. Don't think it's going to happen in the first years. Stay at it. Stay with it. Stay together. The best is yet to come. So listen, wherever you're at in your marriage, be patient. It just gets better. It doesn't matter if you're at 5 or 10 or 20 or 25, you know. I kind of I made 25 years. Did my time. Say it that way. But here's the thing. And I love this woman a lot. And she puts up with me a lot. So when I talk to somebody who's been married for 50 and they talk about the kind of love, like that man talks about the kind of love he has for his wife, I'm like, I haven't even gotten started yet. I haven't even got to the good stuff yet. And we're in this time of our culture where everything needs to be fast and expedited and fast food and all of that. And far too few people are willing to put the time in and to be patient and to wait for the good stuff to come. So be patient. And cultivate an inner beauty. Because in the inner beauty, the ravishes of time can never touch the inner beauty. The inner beauty is what blossoms over time to such a degree that the husband and the wife, after 30 and 40 and 50 years, they look at each other, and it doesn't even matter that there are wrinkles. It doesn't even matter that, hypothetically, they've lost their hair or whatever, you know. They see the heart, and the love is so much deeper and richer and better. Be patient. The second great principle I think that we find in this is that, you know, all marriages go through very tough times. And certainly, if you can imagine what it was like in their home with Rachel and Leah, and Rachel knowing that, you know, in a sense, her husband loved her more than, you know, her sister, or Leah feeling like, you know, why do you spend so much more time with her than with me? And just think about all of the struggles that were going on there. But listen, I really believe, and I think this is such this is something, one of those things that you got to grab a hold of, and I want you to wrestle with it. I believe that two people that are committed to each other and committed to the Lord, that there is nothing in their marriage that they cannot overcome. Committed to each other and committed to the Lord. There is nothing in the marriage that cannot be overcome. Nothing. And this is so important, I think. If you have in the back of your mind when you go into your marriage that it's probably going to be temporary, that there's an escape clause if things don't work, or I'll give this one a whirl for a while. What happens when a hard time comes, you approach that hard time differently than do people who say, no matter what, I'm committed to you for good or for bad forever. You approach it differently when you're committed from the beginning to God's design, one man, one woman, one lifetime. You approach it differently. Now, obviously because of sin, obviously because of lots of reasons, there are times where you can't stay together. But I'm arguing that two people committed to each other and committed to the Lord can overcome anything that comes in their marriage, anything. And I really believe that to be true. So don't believe the lie that the grass is greener, somebody on the other side of the field, you know, other side of the fence. Don't believe that you'll be happier with somebody else. Don't believe that it's just going to be so much greater, because what happens when you leave one relationship and you go into another relationship, all you do is you drag the baggage from one right into the other. The better design, the way God designed us, one man, one woman, one lifetime. Stay at it. Stay committed. So instead, believe the truth. And the truth is that God designed us to be satisfied, to enjoy, to have love that develops over time. One man, one woman, one lifetime. I keep saying that. But God designed you and me to stay married. And there are some things that cannot overcome, but those are the exceptions. So believe me when I say that tough times are going to come. There are going to be good times as well, but be patient. Work through the issues. Seek help. Seek counsel. And then what you'll find is as you work at it and you seek counsel and you humble yourself and you forgive, that there's a love that comes through those hard times that cannot be manufactured any other way. Stay at it. It's worth it. Average marriages can become good marriages. Good marriages can become great marriages, but there is no shortcut to get there.